Good morning and happy Sabbath once again. Recently saw a commercial, had a tagline with it, "End the Suffering." The commercial was basically a commercial advertising the benefits of, before I get into that, what it showed was quite a few people suffering. It showed people who were obviously very sad. People during the pandemic, they were cut off. They were maybe talking on the phone or maybe only seeing each other from Skype or, you know, some other video messaging service. Some of the images even showed people, you know, in hospital beds suffering and dying. And the tagline or the theme behind the message was, in order to end the suffering, go out and get vaccinated against COVID. Now, I've said it before and I'll say it again because it bears repeating. Neither I nor the United Church of God have a stance on whether you should or shouldn't get a vaccine. That's a personal choice. That's purely up to you. It's not a biblical issue. The only time it becomes a biblical issue is that if you feel personally convicted that you cannot or should not get the vaccine, then in accordance with Romans 14, verse 23, you shouldn't do anything that violates your conscience. And if you find yourself in that situation, I can certainly write you a letter to your employer, to your school, asking that you be excused from a COVID vaccination. But to get a vaccine for COVID or anything else, or to have your children vaccinated, that's strictly a personal choice. I've made my decision on that topic. You are to make yours as well. That's not the reason I bring this topic up or mention that commercial. The reason I mention that commercial is because it sparked, I think, a larger question in my mind. Can we end suffering? Can we put a stop to suffering? Suffering that we see in the world, suffering that we might experience personally or wherever. Is it, you know, whether it's our own suffering or others? Can we put an end to suffering? I'd like to ask that question, and if you're looking for a title, the title of today's message is End the Suffering. And I'd like for us to look at a few things. We'd like to look at the various types of suffering there are out there, what causes suffering, and what it is that we can do, if anything at all, to end suffering. Let's begin by looking at the types of suffering there are. We'll break it down, as we often do when it comes to these sorts of matters and issues, into the physical, the emotional, and the spiritual plane. Now, physical suffering, I think we're all well acquainted with. Whether, you know, you fall down and you scrape your knees as a kid, you know, maybe you're in a bad car accident, somebody crosses the center line, they hit you and you break a leg, and you're in a lot of pain, or certainly as many have experienced COVID. There's a lot of physical pain that goes along with that, backache, fever, nausea, all sorts of things, difficulty breathing. So I think we're all aware of what physical suffering is and what it does. It afflicts our body in a way that causes physical pain. Now, a side effect of physical suffering sometimes is emotional suffering. You know, if we're in a car wreck and our leg is broken, we might be laid up for quite a while. We might begin to wonder, when am I going to get back to work? You know, what am I going to do about paying my bills? Or maybe it's a little more serious than that. Maybe it's a loved one who's in this car accident and their life hangs in the balance. You think, well, you know, what am I going to do? Are they going to make it through? You know, if it's your spouse, well, are we ever going to, you know, see our grandchildren together? You know, all see these things are an emotional type of suffering. Even on a small scale, you know, you can think about emotional suffering. You know, maybe a child is cutting out an art project, maybe a small child, you know, first or second grade, they're cutting out an art project at school and they cut their finger. And so now they have to go to the nurse's office. Certainly it's not a life-threatening thing, but it's going to eat into their recess time. And so that's emotional suffering, you know, for a six-year-old. And granted, it's not like losing a job or you know, being in a bad car accident for you and I, but it's a type of emotional suffering. And then you get into the spiritual plane. Now, most people don't refer to this as spiritual suffering, but if you look around and talk about the subject of suffering, oftentimes people refer to the emotional or the emotional suffering that kind of just transcends beyond feelings and goes to something a little higher. They'll talk about it as an existential crisis, right? An existential crisis, meaning your existence, your very existence, the meaning of life is called into question. You know, why am I here? Why am I bothering to enjoy this? Well, what is good? What is bad? What is evil? What is wrong? If we can't answer these questions, what we find is that this can then lead to sin. This can lead to sin, which is the ultimate, the climax of spiritual suffering. Let's think now about how we suffer, or what causes these types of suffering. We're going to look at a few examples here. Let's begin in the physical realm, because that's where we started. We're going to talk about physical pain, physical suffering. What causes it? Physical suffering can be anything from a paper cut to some horrible disease. Again, those who have had COVID, know that it can be quite painful, in fact. Fever, achy joints, stiff joints, things like that. That's all part of it. And of course, unfortunately, there's a myriad of ailments and afflictions out there that bring about quite a bit of physical suffering, and they rob us of the joys and the pleasures of life. So what causes this physical type of suffering? What causes this physical type of suffering? Let's turn over to Proverbs chapter 10. Proverbs 10, and we'll see one of the possible causes of physical suffering. Proverbs chapter 10 is by no means going to be an exhaustive study of all the possible things that can cause suffering, but we're just going to look at a few different thoughts, different ideas of things that cause suffering. Proverbs 10, read in verse 8. Says, the wise in heart will receive commands, but a prating fool will fall. Wise in heart will receive commands, but a prating fool will fall. The NLT puts it this way, the wise are glad to be instructed, but babbling fools fall flat on their faces. Did mama ever tell you not to run with scissors? Well, if we're foolish, we wouldn't listen to such basic, simple advice. That's an example, though, a very simple example. Proverbs 16, verse 18, just a few chapters over, Proverbs 16 and verse 18. It says, pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Now, we often think of this in spiritual terms. We might think, for example, of the story of Haman. Haman, and you might recall, we read about in the book of Esther, and Haman had a plot to kill Mordecai. He went so far as to build a gallows, or perhaps it was a giant pike, on which Mordecai would be hung or staked on. But Esther helped expose the plot, and not only did Mordecai not wind up on a gallows, Haman actually had to go around, leading Mordecai out on the king's best horse and saying, look and glorify Mordecai, which is what Haman wanted for himself. So his pride definitely got smashed there. And then it went one step farther, and when the king found out about this whole plot, Haman wound up being hung on his own gallows, what you might call hubris. That's an example, certainly, of pride that led to a great fall. And there's physical pain there as well as emotional pain. But pride does cause physical pain in perhaps not such a dramatic way. When I was a kid, we grew up out in the country, and although we didn't have a barn and a hay loft, I had a lot of friends who did. And inevitably, a couple of times, probably during when I was in high school, there would be two guys up in the hayloft, and one would challenge the other to jump into the hay pile below. You're too chicken. No, I'm not. Yes, you are. No, I'm not. Yes, you are. And eventually, somebody jumps, falls, and breaks their leg. it's an issue of pride. They wanted to show, hey, I'm not too chicken, and then they do something foolish, and they break a leg. Sometimes it's not always an immediate disaster. Now, if you smoke, you go to the doctor tells you, you know, you need to quit smoking or you're going to get emphysema. Emphysema is a very terrible, painful lung disease, causes death. And if we're proudful, we might say, I'm young, I'm healthy, and I'm in good shape. You know, I'll do some exercise to offset it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then 20 years later, we find ourselves lying in bed, unable to get out because we've got this terrible case of emphysema. You know, that's a matter of pride there that led us to some physical pain. Let's shift our focus, and I should also mention there are other things that cause pain besides ignoring good advice and pride, but those are just a few examples for the purpose of our message today. Let's shift our focus and think a little bit about things that cause emotional and then consequentially spiritual suffering. Sometimes people get hurt simply because opinions differ. Take for the example of Jacob, Leah, and Rachel. As you may recall, Jacob sees Rachel there at the well. His heart skips a beat. He goes, he meets her, he falls in love with her. He wants to marry her, and that's all well and fine. But there's a bit of a problem, and that's the fact that Rachel has an older sister, Leah. And in the culture at the time, it would have been a real shame, a real slap in the face for Leah to not be married before her younger sister does. So Jacob knew and he understood this, so he works out an agreement with his soon-to-be father-in-law, Laban, that says, okay, in order to have the younger sister, I'll work 7 years for you. Let's pick up the story here in Genesis 29 then. Genesis 29. We're going to read starting in verse 16. Genesis 29. We're going to pick it up in verse 16. It says, now Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were delicate, but Rachel was beautiful in form and appearance. Now, there's a lot of speculation out there amongst biblical scholars as to what exactly it means that Leah's eyes were delicate. Some think it means that she was blind or that she had some sort of a sight condition. Others think it just means that, you know, maybe she wasn't quite as pretty as what Rachel was. But in any case, we get to the root matter here if we continue reading. Verse 18 says, now Jacob loved Rachel. So he said, I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter. Now, regardless of the reason why, the bottom line is that Jacob loved Rachel. Is that wrong for him to do so? Was that a sin for him to like this one sister better than the other? No, it's not. You know, we can read the rest of the story. Laban deceives Jacob. He winds up marrying Leah instead. Then he has to work another 7 years in order to finally have Rachel. And sin and blame does come up later on. And Jacob's life was a very complicated one with 12 children by two wives and two handmaidens. But at the very beginning of the story here, before any of the sin and any of the hurt occurred, did Jacob do anything wrong? Now, we're not told all the details of their courtship. We don't know exactly how long this process was. Most think it seems like it was fairly quick. But there was no sin in him choosing that I would like to marry Rachel instead of Leah. When you get down to it, most of the times when it comes to romance, it's not a sinful thing to decide who it is you love. Now, as we have read in the Marriage and Family booklet, there are things we should be wise about. We need to recognize that love isn't just an emotion. It's not just a feeling. It's not just, you know, your heart going pitter-pat. There's nothing wrong with having physical attraction, but it must be based on more than that. It must be a deep agape love. And there can be good and bad choices that people make. Oftentimes, people use love as a synonym for lust, and they use it to justify sinful behavior. Someone who's been married for years decides that they don't really love their wife anymore, but instead they like their secretary at work. And they know that because they really love that secretary at work, and they know also because God loves them, God would want them to be happy. And so since God loves me, and since I love my secretary, I'm doing all this out of love, and it's okay for me to go and leave my wife and go marry my secretary. Now we have to be careful. Now obviously we can't use emotions, we can't use feelings to justify sin, but in this particular case, we're talking about Jacob and Leah and Rachel. We're talking about people, young single people who meet for the first time, and it just so happens that Jacob falls in love with Rachel and not Leah. Now, I use that story just to make a point, because it's a good biblical story. Sometimes the suffering we experience is nothing to do with love and loss or anything like that. It's not sin. It's not bad judgment. Sometimes the emotional suffering that we go through is just time and chance. It's just the product of living on a planet that contains other human beings. Consider this example. Maybe you've invited some people over to your house for a nice Sabbath dinner, and you're known for a signature dessert. This signature dessert that you make requires a package of cream cheese. Friday morning, you realize you don't have any, so you go to the grocery store, only to realize, guess what? There's a cream cheese shortage. And by the way, this is true. If you're not aware, there is, in fact, a cream cheese shortage out there. We suffered from it this morning, in fact. We had some nice yeast rolls, and my wife makes a lovely cream cheese icing that goes on it. And we had one package of cream cheese left, and that is being reserved for my Skyline chili dip tonight when I watch the Bengals game. So we had to use store-bought frosting for our rolls. It was a terrible, terrible thing. We're hurt because now we can't make our signature dessert for our friends coming over, and so instead you have to settle for ice cream or some such thing. Now here's another example. Your neighbor decides that they'd like to have a little bit of privacy in their yard, so they put up a fence. There's nothing illegal about that. They've, adhered to all the local codes and building requirements, but they want privacy in their backyard, so they put up a fence, which is just fine, except for the fact that now that they put up the fence, you can't see the sunset from your back porch the way you used to. Your neighbor didn't do anything wrong. They just put up a fence. Perfectly within their right, perfectly within the law to do so, but it's hurt you. And these sorts of cases, the things that other people did weren't sinful or wrong. Maybe they just hurt us. In the case of the cream cheese, maybe you're going to the store, you get there and you see somebody. You see there's a lady just a few feet ahead of you and there's two packages of cream cheese left. And what does she do? She grabs both of them. You only need one. Why does she need two? She's being greedy. That's terrible. Is she? Do you know that? Do you know that she's being greedy? Or maybe she's making a dessert for friends, and her particular dessert requires two packages of cream cheese. What just happened? We went from a state of emotional suffering to a state of spiritual suffering. We're hurt because we can't have our cream cheese. And what do? We presume judgment on this woman that she's doing some terrible thing. Or with the neighbor. Why do they have to put up that stupid fence? It doesn't matter to them. Why can't they just deal with having, no fence like everybody else? They did that just to spite me. Did they? Did they do it to spite you, or did they just want privacy? Maybe they're getting a dog and they need to have a fence to keep their dog in. You see, what happens very often is things that hurt us emotionally lead us to a state of spiritual suffering, aka sin. Of course, we should be considerate if the shoe is on the other foot. If I'm that shopper that beats somebody else to the cream cheese, do I need both packages? Well, if you do, go ahead and get them. That's fine. But if you just need one, leave one for someone else. If I'm the neighbor putting up a fence, I need a fence to keep my dog in, but does it have to be 8 feet high? Or would a 4-foot fence do just fine? You see, we have a responsibility, even though we might have the right, we have the responsibility to consider other people's emotions and feelings as well. What we see, again, is that emotional suffering often leads to sin, and sin leads us to a separation from God. We won't read all these for sake of time, but you might jot down Isaiah 59, verse 2, 1 Corinthians 6, verse 19, Revelation 21, verse 8. All of those scriptures describe how sin separates us from God, the peak, the zenith of spiritual suffering. We'll turn to just one scripture in this regard, and that's over in Micah 3, verse 4. More challenging to flip through your Bible when you don't have a lectern to lay it on. Micah 3. Verse 4, it says, then they will cry to the Lord, but he will not hear them. This is talking about those who have turned from God, specifically in ancient Israel. It says, they will cry to the Lord, but he will not hear them. He will even hide his face from them at that time because they have been evil in their deeds. No, sin blots us out from the book of life. It cuts us off from God. It causes us to lose our place in the kingdom, quite simply. I would submit to you that spiritual suffering, this is by far the most devastating and the most common sort of suffering mankind faces. It can manifest itself in lots of different ways. The political arena, wars, protests, divisions. You know, people are looking for an answer that they can't get on their own. They have this existential crisis. You know, they question their very existence, so they begin to wonder why. Why can't I do it this way? Who's to say what's right, what's wrong? They don't like something somebody else has or does, and perhaps it leads to a sinful reaction. You know, a movement of some kind, a military action. And while not every movement is sinful, there are certainly, you know, good and right things that there have been movements in regards to, we see that oftentimes, you know, these movements that wind up changing the face of the earth, sometimes they're just justifications for sin. For example, maybe you feel in a wrong way of thinking. Maybe you feel that what's standing between you and your fellow countrymen, what's standing between you and your country and the perfect society and utopia is a certain race of people. So you decide the best thing to do is to kill them all. Genocide, Nazi Germany, perfect example. Or sometimes the crisis is, well, you know, we have a lot of things here that we could sell and make some money on, and we have a market that we can sell it to. We just don't quite have the means to process our goods and get them into the shape where we can sell them to other people. So what we decide to do is we'll go enslave people from Africa, bring them to this country, force them to work and create our goods, and then we'll export those to Europe, and it's a perfect solution, right? No, it's not. It causes hurtful things. More recently, things like what was discussed in last night's letter, things also was discussed in the e-news this week, people don't want to adhere to biblical values. They feel like, no, I want to marry somebody of my own sex, or I want to change my gender. No, I want to form a movement then that says these biblical values can't, shouldn't even be spoken about. Again, we see that that's what's happened in Canada already. That's what's about ready to happen here in this country, very likely. You know, all these things have a root in spiritual suffering, spiritual misunderstandings. People trying to solve their own existential crisis by creating the perfect world economy, creating a perfect world order, you know, changing laws to say that God doesn't exist, can't be talked about. Commit horrible atrocities along the way, and they wind up separating themselves from God. The most terrible form of suffering there is, spiritual suffering. And while a lot of the fallout from these sorts of things is physical and emotional suffering, we need to understand that the root cause is spiritual suffering. Now, please understand what I'm saying when I'm talking about this. I'm not saying, oh, we should feel so sorry for, you know, those Nazis. They were suffering so terribly. No, what I'm saying is they were under a delusion. They were suffering from this delusion that what they were doing was the right thing. They felt like this is the solution because they lacked spiritual understanding. They had spiritual suffering. That was the problem. That's what then caused them to carry out, create sinful actions that led to a lot of physical and emotional suffering for others. When we get upset, you or I, we get upset over somebody's actions that's not sinful. Somebody buys 2 packages of cream cheese. they put up a fence where we wish they wouldn't have. We get upset, whether we like to admit it or not. We begin to suffer spiritually because we begin to sin by getting angry, to get upset. Maybe we even lash out and say something and do something that's not very Christ-like. When we let these things trip us up in sin, you and I slip into a state of spiritual suffering. It's from this point then that I would like to go forward and look at what it is we can do to end our suffering. Understanding this, understanding that so much of the suffering we endure comes from a lack of spiritual understanding, spiritual suffering on our part, we can now begin to understand what can we do to truly end suffering. Let's consider, again, the physical to begin with here. As we read earlier, when we listen to wise instruction and Proverbs, we can avoid maybe physical mistakes. You know, mama says, don't run with the scissors. Don't run with the scissors. Or the teacher says, hey, be careful, you know, when you're cutting out your whatever it is, you're cutting out your tree, you know, out of paper, be careful that you don't cut through and cut your finger. And we listen to that instruction. We can avoid being hurt. If we don't, we might find ourselves hurt. Another proverb that tells us how to avoid physical suffering, we can read over in Proverbs 25, verse 16. Let's turn there. Proverbs 25, verse 16. It says, have you found honey? Eat only as much as you need, lest you be filled with it and vomit. You know, we're told that eating too much honey will make you sick. It wasn't honey, but when I was a kid, I remember eating these little maple nut goodie candies. And I wound up getting sick on my stomach from it. And for about 25 years, I couldn't even stand the smell of those without getting sick, without getting nauseous. This points to an overall arching principle when it comes to perhaps helping avoid some physical suffering, and that is, watch what you eat. You know, while to some degree mankind, I believe, has poisoned our food supply, that we can't get totally pure food anymore, and we can never avoid all physical suffering, here we see a biblical principle that says, you know, perhaps we can minimize it if we're careful in what we eat. We eat a balanced diet, things like that. Although not all physical suffering is avoidable, much of it is. Listening to the advice of others. know, maybe being careful and reading the directions on a dangerous piece of equipment. You know, if you work in an industrial environment, it says, hey, don't put your hand here, you could lose a finger or something like that. No, that's all listening and hearing to instructions. These are all things we can do to reduce our physical suffering. Now, when it comes to emotional suffering, things are a bit more complicated, to say the least. Dealing with things that other people or even we are that ourselves, we ourselves do, dealing with things that other people or we ourselves do is hard because it involves feelings. Having a hurt feeling is very intimate. It's very personal. If you've ever tried to change someone's feelings, you know it's impossible. You can't change somebody's feelings. You can talk to them, you can reason to them, you can give them sound advice. You can say, well, you know, this may not be the best choice to do this or that, or you may consider doing X or Y or Z. No, but you can't change someone's feelings. When it comes down to it, it's kind of like Smokey the Bear says, right? Only you can prevent forest fires. Only you can change your feelings. Only you can change how you feel about something. So the question becomes, how can we do that in order to help reduce our own emotional suffering? How can we change our feelings, things that upset us, things that cause us emotional and possibly spiritual suffering? How can we change those feelings to avoid suffering? I'd like to look at an example here, the book of Genesis. One that you might not think of right away when it comes to the subject of emotional suffering. And the reason why you probably don't think of that is because, as we're going to read in the story, the person didn't suffer emotionally. They chose not to. Genesis 13, verse 1. Genesis 13, and verse 1. It says, then Abram went up from Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him to the south. Abram was very rich in livestock and silver and in gold, and he went on his journey from the south as far as Bethel, to the place where his tent had been at the beginning between Bethel and Ai, to the place of the altar which he had made there at first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. Lot also, who went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. Now the land was not able to support them, that they might dwell together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. Today we might call this first world problems. You know, I've got so many cars, I can't park them all in my, you know, driveway. I need a bigger driveway. No, it's a first world problem. It's not life endangering. It's just, you know, something nice we'd like to have. Verse 7, it says, and there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. The Canaanites and the Perizzites then dwelt in the land. So we have this conflict set up. Abram had been told to go to Canaan. He took his nephew Lot with him. And once they got there, they ran into a basic supply and demand problem. The demand of their flocks was more than what the ground could supply. It says it got so bad that there was strife between the herdsmen. And while the Bible doesn't really go into detail, we can kind of imagine the scenario. You know, it probably just didn't start overnight. They'd been on the road months together. You know how it can be when you're on a long road trip. You know, for those of you who have taken a long trip to the feast and you had kids in the backseat of the car, you know how by the time you get there, you're ready to get them out of that car before somebody gets hurt. Probably not too different between the herdsmen. They were getting on each other's nerves. And even though Abram and Lot might have gotten along, they had folks that worked with them that didn't. And this is a difficult situation to be in. I have been there as a manager. I have had people who worked for me that didn't necessarily get along or work well with maybe other people within our company. And those folks, manager and I, might have got along just fine. But we had to get together and figure out a way to resolve the issue. The same was true for Abram and Lot. And that's exactly what they did. If we continue to read here, verse 8 says, Abram said to Lot, please let there be no strife between you and me and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren. is not the whole land before you. Please separate from me. If you take the left, I will go to the right. Or if you go to the right, then I will go to the left. There was a potential there for hurt, but Abram said, you know, we're going to head it off. You go one direction, I'll go the other. Doesn't matter. You choose. He gave him that choice, which land to take. Verse 10, and Lot lifted his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan, and that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord had destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as you go toward Zoar. So they give us some references to some land there. In other words, it was really good land, what today you might call bottom land, down a valley where all the nutrients are, where the water flows, really good prime land. Lot looks and he sees this and he decides that's what he wants to take. Now, that's not necessarily, and we've got to be careful, we don't want to judge Lot here because we have to understand Abram gave him the choice. But, you know, Lot choosing the best land for himself, it wasn't necessarily the most humble thing to do, but it was his choice. It's one that Abram gave him. Abram didn't get upset about it. He said, okay, you go that way, I'll go this way. He let it go. He let it go. Verse 14, continuing on, says, and the Lord said to Abram, after Lot had separated from him, lift your eyes now and look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, and westward, for all the land which you see I give to you and your descendants forever. And I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if a man could number the dust of the earth, then your descendants could also be numbered. Arise, walk in the land through its length and its width, for I will give it to you. I'd like to offer just a little bit of speculation and conjecture here. I think it's fairly safe. I don't think it really mattered which piece of land Lot chose. If he would have chose to go to the left and Abram went to the right, then I think God would have said, okay, the land to the right is the land that's going to be blessed, and vice versa. It's not just the blessing of the land here, though, that's critical, is it? There are other things that would happen. Lot ultimately would wind up in Sodom and Gomorrah, needing to be rescued from it. But notice what Abram did for the purposes of today's message. He said, I'm not going to get hurt over the decision you make, Lot. Either way is going to be fine by me. You know, there was a great potential for that. Abram could have walked away mumbling under his breath, that jerk Lot, why do you do that? He took the best land. You know, I didn't have to even bring him on this. God is the one who came to me and said that he was going to take me here to this promised land. And I'm here being a nice guy trying to take Lot along with me. And what's he do? He goes and takes the best land for himself. But Abram doesn't do that, does he? Instead, he lets it go. And what's he do? He trusted God. You know, when he set out on this trip at the beginning, he made it up in his mind. He purposed in his heart. He was going to trust God. He knew when he got to that top of that mountain and looked down, left, right, it really didn't make a difference which way he went. He knew that God was going to bless him and deliver on the promises that he gave. Let's look at another example here of this kind of thought. In this particular case, we're going to look at a person who maybe didn't do quite as good a job, at least initially, as what Abram did. When it came to the possibility of being hurt emotionally, and Jesus Christ himself actually had to correct their sinful thoughts. Let's turn over to John chapter 21. John 21. John 21, and we're going to pick it up in verse 20. John 21, verse 20. Then Peter, turning around, saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following, who also had leaned on his breast at the supper and said, Lord, who is the one who betrays you? Peter, seeing him, said to Jesus, but Lord, what about this man? Now, what was going on right now? Well, if you back up a few verses, and we won't read it all for the sake of time, but Jesus Christ had just explained to Peter, had asked him about the feeding of his sheep, and of course Peter gets exasperated and says, yes, of course, and Jesus asks him, do you love me? And they go through all of that, and he tells Peter, he says, you know, a time is going to come when you get older, when you're not going to have a say, Peter, where you go, what you do. If you back up, in fact, to verse 18, it says, most assuredly I say to you, and this is Christ talking to Peter, says, when you were younger, you girded yourself and walked where you wished. And when you're old, you will stretch out your hands, and another will gird you and carry you where you do not wish. Jesus Christ is telling Peter, you know, you're going to get old. You're going to be physically weak. You're not going to have a choice of where you're going to go, what you're going to do. Somebody else is going to have to dress you and carry you around. Peter didn't like that. It hurt him. He was suffering emotionally. He looks around and he sees John. He says, yeah, well, what about this guy? You know, I got to go through all this. What about him? You know, in that moment, Peter got very judgmental. He went from that emotional suffering. He stepped over a line there and he began to be presumptuous about John and about John's fate. Peter doesn't like the idea very much. And so in that moment of jealousy, there was sin on Peter's part. Jesus Christ says this, then in verse 22, Jesus says, if I will that he remain till I come, what is that to you? Follow me. Jesus Christ says, you know what? What if he's allowed to live? Not just live a nice life, but live however long it's going to be until I return, Christ, you know, until Christ returns. He says, what is that to you? Your job, Peter, no matter what happens to anybody else, no matter the choices that anybody else makes, no matter what suffering they may go through, what suffering you may go through, what I may go through, what Peter went through, the instruction is the same. Follow Jesus Christ. Follow Jesus Christ. That, quite simply, is how we can avoid a great deal of emotional and spiritual suffering. Keeping in mind that we, not just Christians, as we talked about the other week, but as Christ-like disciples, we follow him. Oh, there's going to be emotional suffering in our life. There's going to be people making choices we don't like. There's going to be the loss of loved ones, the loss of possessions. There's going to be physical pains, you know, scraped knees, who knows what other things may come. And it's not wrong to feel hurt. God created us with emotions. But what we have to understand is we can't let the physical suffering build into emotional suffering and build into spiritual suffering, sin. We can't do that. It can lead us to anger or jealousy. Could have led Abram there momentarily. It seems that Peter was going that direction. When that happens, we have a problem. People are motivated to do things, all sorts of sinful actions, murder, adultery, you name it, it's out there. We see people doing this. It hurts us. They shouldn't do that. You're right. They shouldn't do that. But what should you do? Quite simply, we need to follow Jesus. When he says follow him, it truly means to follow him, not just in words only, but in our actions and our effort to be more Christ-like. See, it doesn't matter if, you know, Billy Bob over there puts that fence up to spite me. Or, you know, Sally Sue at the grocery store. She takes the last two packages of cream cheese just because she's hoarding them for herself. And she's going to sell them on eBay for $20 an ounce or whatever. Doesn't change what I have to do. No, I need to follow Jesus Christ. What that exact path maybe might look a little bit different for you than what it does for me as a pastor, for you as a school teacher, whatever it is that you do. But whatever it is, we can avoid emotional and spiritual suffering. We can avoid much emotional suffering and much spiritual suffering if we remember this fundamental concept. Follow me. Follow me. We're called disciples. The concept of being a follower of Christ, of being his disciple, must lead us. The neighbor puts up that fence. If someone buys all the cream cheese, if the government mandates vaccinations and takes away your right to assembly, no matter what happens, our primary directive must be to follow Jesus Christ. We will never be able to eliminate all the suffering we endure in life. We can make wise decisions, we can heed advice and hopefully reduce some of our physical suffering. When it comes to emotional suffering, which so often leads to spiritual suffering, sometimes we just have to do as Abram did. We have to learn to let it go. Sure, there's a time to grieve and cope with loss, but there comes a point when we must go forward. We must let it go, and we must make sure that it doesn't lead us to separation from God via sin, the worst of all types of suffering, spiritual suffering. I'd like to conclude today, the message today, with a quote from the YouVersion Bible app. It's from a daily devotional entitled, How to Love People You Disagree With, and it doesn't have a date or an author on it, but it's from the YouVersion Bible app. It's a free app you can get on your smart device. The quote says this. It says, at the end of the day, the point of loving people we disagree with is unity. Whether the issue is petty or prominent, we can choose people first. Because if we, as followers of Jesus, want people to know our Savior and Lord the way we do, that's where we have to start. Let's represent Jesus well so that others want to know him, and when they do, the Holy Spirit is quite capable of leading them to adjust any viewpoints that are inconsistent with his truth. This quote is written slightly from a Trinitarian point of view. I might modify that a little bit by saying God, through his Holy Spirit, is quite capable of leading others to change their view to align to his truth. You know, the Nazis that killed Jews, the slave traders who enslaved, you know, millions of people, they were wrong. The time is coming when God will show them they were wrong. They'll have an opportunity to see and understand the hurt that they caused, the physical pain, the emotional pain, and they'll understand the reason they did so was from a state of spiritual suffering, a state of sin. When we learn to let it go, we can learn to let God deal with those things in his time. You and I, we can't change what people think or what they do. Putting up a privacy fence, buying cream cheese. Abram couldn't stop Lot from choosing the most choice land. And Peter, he couldn't trade his life for John's. But what we can do is let go of emotional suffering, which leads us to spiritual suffering. We can do this by maintaining our focus on following Jesus Christ.